You had Isaac Del Toro on the Chipresa, who wrote a fantastic tempo. I mean, you could tell people were immediately in the Hurt Locker. He's a young kid. This is his first Milan-San Remo. If you don't know the exact time to go and how long you can go for, and does that get you over the top? It's hard. He couldn't make it to the top. He rode a fantastic pace. He was all alone on Team UAE, and he couldn't get to the top. And then that sort of neutralized the group. They just felt a little out of sync today. Well, good morning, everybody. Welcome back to the Move Podcast, talking about the 2024 Milan-San Remo. Actually, no, we're not. We're talking about Pavia to San Remo, which for whatever reason, I want to hear about this. And who better to explain this than joining me right now, Johan Bernil. New backdrop, new scene. Yeah. Johan is in Murcia, Spain, where his son Christian, who we discovered in the pre-show, doesn't follow me on Strava. That's a whole nother podcast, perhaps. But Christian had a race today. Christian is also my godson. Another sort of a sensitive thing. You know, feel like, I don't know, I'm going to follow my godfather. Johan's over there in Murcia and JB down there in Austin.
South by Southwest. This town's pretty lit up right now.
You know, I caught a little bit of it before. I'm sitting here in Aspen, Colorado. We're up here for spring break. We've got one more day. I was telling y'all earlier, you know, like family's always like, when are you going to come skiing with us? This and that. I said, boy, today, I said, hey, guys, Milan-San Remo, I had to get up early, got the show. Sorry, can't make it. But anyways, it was nice to have that. But back to, and well, before we get to this, and you will all notice, and you'll hear over the course of the show, if you're just listening, somebody's missing. That's Mr. Hincappy. George big time. He has a fondo in Merced, California, which of course, if you can think back or remember back to last year, they had planned it, had all the rains, had all the weather, washed out the roads, and the fondo was not possible. So it sounds like they were able to run it this year, which is great. So George won't be with us today, which is too bad because this is certainly a race that we all know that he loved. And while he never won this race, it's one that really suited him. So we'll try to get by. We'll try to make do without George, but we miss him. Johan, why, just real quick, and we'll take care of some business. First of all, if they're going to start in Pavia for whatever reason, first of all, I want to know. Secondly, who cares? Still call it Milan-San Remo. What was the reason anyhow?
But did they call it Pavia-San Remo? No.
The RCS website, it says Pavia.
No way. I mean, listen, Paris-Roubaix doesn't start in Paris, right? I've heard, it's been changing a few times. It's been a few years already that they don't start anymore at the Duomo in Milan. And I guess it's what I've heard is it's a money issue, you know, that those Milan doesn't pay anything and other other little cities are willing to pay for the start. And I guess they shortened the distance to 288 kilometers, right? Since they started there.
Still a long ways.
It's still a very long way. Yeah. Yeah. I know. Well,
I stand corrected. The website does say Milan-San Remo, but look, this cycling's funny. I mean, this is it for those that have followed certainly this event for years, man, having the Peloton and obviously everything around it, the caravan, the whole scene, starting Milan-San Remo at the Duomo. Mm-hmm. There's something about that. It's very special. That's too bad. I don't know what somebody else paid Pavia, but boy, you're missing out on some cool photo ops.
Yeah, I know. It's possible that RCS doesn't have the political power anymore to organize it there. You know, we don't know. But yeah,
we need you to get on that.
I think it's a shame. It's a shame. It's the start at the Duomo is, you know, definitely an incredible photo op.
Interesting. All right. Before we get into it, because it was a fantastic win by Jasper Philipsen. Fantastic, I think, team performance by his team Alpecin. Obviously, he was largely benefited from having Matthew Vanderpool there, but the team controlled the race and it was close. Some of these, we'll get into it, but before we do, today's show brought to you by Element. Well, we talk about it all the time. And here's the thing. We're getting to this time of year where yours truly is outside all the time. And, you know, JB, you're down there. You know what's right around the corner. It's about to be hot and humid in Austin. This old boy is going to be sweating his ass off. That's all. I mean, it's constant. And I found something that can help me and replace it all. And that's Element, right? No sugar, no gluten, no artificial ingredients, no BS. It is the real deal. And best of all, if you don't like it, give it to a friend and Element will refund you. What I'm talking about is our listeners get a free Element sample pack with any order when you order over at drinklmnt.com/themove. Again, that's drinklmnt.com/themove. And just a reminder, 1,000 milligrams of sodium, 200 milligrams of potassium, 60 milligrams of magnesium. Also today brought to you by Tushy. And if those were listening to the pre-show, we felt like we might have heard JB ran away for a second. There was a slight noise. It didn't sound like a tushy, but it sounded like something else. But I was a little worried. It was a quick stop. So I feel strongly we were talking about number one. Mm-hmm. But here's the but if we do have to talk about number two, here's the thing. Tushy has finally made number two cleanup more hygienic and better for the environment. You can now have a fresh stream of water, the same water as your sink or your shower, to clean up your bum after every poop. I feel like I need emojis for this. And the beautiful thing about I love about Tushy is I was a consumer years ago, right? And I've told you all this several times, and I mean it. My wife, all the time, honey, you know, I want one of these $5,000, foreign toilets. I said, shit, there ain't no way I am buying a $5,000 toilet, I promise you. So I'm on the internet, and what do I find? This is years ago. I'm like, dude, I'm always looking for hacks. Like, what is a hack for this? What is a hack for that? I found a hack for this $5,000 toilet, and it was Tushy. I'm telling you, it's been and she didn't even know the difference. That's the other thing. She didn't know the difference. I was like, yeah. Fucking husband of the year. For a limited time off, our listeners get 10% off their entire order at Hello Tushy. Hello is the way it sounds. And Tushy, T-U-S-H-Y, HelloTushy.com. Use the code WEDO for 10% off your entire order. Again, that's HelloTushy.com. Also today brought to you by AG1. This is something else that's just been a part of my daily regimen for years. This is something that, I say it a lot and I mean it, right? For folks that are out there wanting to take control of their health, like how do we take control of our health? Do we manage habits? Do we focus on sleep? Do we, whatever it is, that is taking control of your health. And I just also said, talking about hacks, I think for me, I found a hack, right? Y'all know I don't eat my fruits and vegetables like my mom always told me to do and wanted me to do. I just don't, but I have found a hack and it is AG1, all the adaptogens, all the probiotics. It's a complete game changer. Also too, if you listen around to other shows, listen to all these smart guys, right? They'll tell you AG1's been a game changer. If you want to take ownership of your health, start with AG1, try AG1 and get a free 1-year supply of vitamin D3 plus K2 and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first purchase exclusively at drinkag1.com/themove. Again, that's drinkag1.com/themove. Check it out. Johan, I know you were watching. Well, you were watching too.
Right? Actually, funny story. I was watching the final of the race with a guy who was sitting next to me who was nervous as hell and almost celebrated. I was with Matthew White, ex-teammate of yours, ex-rider, now the head sport director of Jayco Alula, and he was obviously rooting for Michael Matthews, and he almost won it. So it was because his son raced in the same race as my son. So that was quite nice. So we watched it. We watched it carefully.
And Michael Matthews looked great. I mean, if you think about, or if I think about his career and races like this for him, if he makes it to the finish, he would have been dropped. He managed to come back. He was there. He looked strong the whole time. And
on the Poggio, looked really strong.
Look great. And for those trying to imagine what Johan's talking about, and let's just put it into reality. I mean, he lost by a foot, maybe. I mean, it was so close that Jasper Philipsen did not know that he had won.
Yeah.
And so for 30 seconds after the finish, you saw him sort of looking around, looking for the answer. He didn't know that he had won. Pretty close. I mean, it wasn't a true photo finish where you had to go to the film, but he didn't know. So great ride. Great. Excellent ride by Michael Matthews.
Yeah. I mean, you know, Milan-San Remo was one of those races where it's so difficult to predict. And there's certain riders that can peak towards this race. Michael Matthews, for example, one of them. I mean, if you look at Michael Matthews' season until now, we haven't seen him anywhere. He did win, I think, his first race he did in Spain. It was a lower level race. Had to abandon in Paris-Nice after 3 days because he was sick. Shows up at Milan-San Remo, is there and almost wins it. You know, so it's difficult to say, okay, we were all talking about Mathieu van der Poel, who we also hadn't seen racing, and his first race, which is, I mean, is really incredible if you think about it, right?
No, he looked good.
Going up and being there.
He looked good.
Pogacar, same thing, you know, did one race. We already knew he was great. He did Strade Bianche. And then, so it's difficult to predict. And then there's always the question, and the last few years, a little bit less, because normally this is a race sprinters can make it over the Poggio and they have a chance when it comes back together. The last few years, not so much, but this year was different. You know, the two strong guys were there. I think, you know, we missed Wout van Aert in that final. With him, it would probably have been a bit more aggressive, but still, I don't think the outcome would have been a lot different. But yeah, I mean, once Van der Poel was over the Poggio, saw he couldn't get a gap, and he saw that Philipsen, or he probably heard in his earpiece that Philipsen was there, he was dedicated to the team. And, he knew that he wasn't going to get away. And from that moment on, just, you know, thanks to Van der Poel, Philipsen wins. Otherwise,
yeah, that's for sure. Otherwise, yeah, it's one of these, which we've seen several times in the last few years, where it's a race for an opportunist. Right. And as it should be, right? If you are that opportunist and you cannot win in a sprint, you have to go. Right. But if it's a group of 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 riders and they're all from individual teams, well, we know what happens, right? They sit around and there's always one that's sort of whoever is the fastest should have the responsibility, but that never works. And so without him, I mean, who wins? I mean, maybe Mohoric.
I think Mohoric move was the move without goes to the finish.
I don't know if you guys saw Van der Poel in the post race interview. You know, he said Philipsen rolled up and said, I've got good legs. And that's that's all he needed to hear. And it just says a lot about Van der Poel, his putting his ego aside, working for the team. This is a plan. He didn't say exactly how his legs felt, but he said when Philipsen said, I've got legs, that's all he needed to hear.
Well, I tell you, and that brings, I'm glad you brought that up, JB, because I was, you know, I got a little grief last week. I put up this post of, I did Danny Duncan's podcast. And for those who don't know, Danny Duncan's he's a young, famous YouTuber. He's a funny kid. He's a great kid. I love him. And I said on the podcast and that I just don't understand how these guys can compete. And then when the race is over, they're sort of high-fiving and hugging. And which is true. I don't regret saying that. In fact, I'm about to say it again. But all these fucking nerds who cover cycling, did you see these articles? Yeah, what do you write about something else? Who cares? So Philipsen finishes and he finally figures out that he wins. He's basically celebrating with the camera, which was hilarious. That was the only person there. And you see a hand come in, like it's a, and I'm like, okay, here comes Matthew Van Der Poel for a big hug. No, it was Michael Matthews. And then it was Pogacar. And then I'm thinking, okay, what the fuck is going on here? I I don't get it.
Yeah. In your day, if you didn't win a sprint and you were edged out, you probably couldn't get to the bus fast enough.
Just keep moving. But I'm not passing judgment. I'm not calling anybody anything. I'm just saying, I don't get it. And it was reminded today. And I just thought it was funny because I was like, you didn't know what he's talking about. Oh, whatever.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you hear Pogacar speak after the finish, he says, you know what? Well, I love to lose against them because both of them are huge friends. I mean, Philipsen is a friend. Michael Matthews is a friend. I think even Van der Poel is a big friend. And he says, you know, I like to lose against them. And then he said something which I kind of think it was a bit more marketing declaration than something. He says, the most beautiful podium in my life. I mean, that's not, you know.
You bring up a very interesting thing because, okay, I've heard you in particular talk about your era and how you felt about your competitors, and you used it as fuel. That's the best way I can describe it.
Yeah,
it was another fuel source for you to motivate you every day to get on the bike and train and be ready. So the question I have for you guys, like, if you take that equation, take that entirely out of the equation, like, I don't know. I lean much more into what you did. Like, the hate, like, I don't want, hatred is a strong word.
Well, you don't want people throwing fisticuffs. but it's just different.
It's also, you know, I think you can get into a state like you build up a story to kind of, you know, I mean, not dislike the guy, but, you know, I mean, you have to be in a situation that you kind of, when you drop someone, you can't feel bad about it. And it, to me, it seems like these guys are, you know, just hugging and, you know, training together and talk, you know, it's like, okay, so now I'm going to kill him on the bike. I'm going to just drop him, you know. I'm with you, Lance, but I think we're old and old fashioned guys. You know, we're our time has passed.
Yeah. And with the cycling press, it's clearly not a popular opinion. But here's another thing you guys should know. I don't care. But let's go back to the race.
I knew you were going to say it.
I don't care. And nor do I need to care. But let's go back to the Poggio because it's, you know, I think if we went over the course of certainly going back to the Merckx era where, you know, Merckx won Milan San Remo, help me here, Johan.
Seven times,
right? And if you go back, I mean, he literally attacked in the very same place, I think, 6 of the 7 years or maybe all of those years. I mean, within 10 or 20 meters. I mean, they just may as well paint a line across there. It's like Eddie's line. Here we go. Pogacar, and it's been the place that, and maybe it's just naturally the obvious place to go. Pogacar tried to go. He just couldn't. And I was proud of him, I will say, because, you know, a lot of times he will go and start to look. He didn't look back. He went as hard as he could. And maybe he's getting intel in the ear, but he went and he didn't look back. And then he gave a little look underneath his arm, but he couldn't go. But then he went again. Like, it was and he was gone. I mean, without Matthew Vanderpool, everybody else sat up. And then Vanderpool comes with this incredible effort right over the top of the Poggio and catches up. And then they might have been gone. If you remember back, then we're on the downhill. Well, who brings them back on the downhill? Tom Pidcock, who's, you know, can go down the Poggio. By the way, it's a terrifying downhill. He goes down it with his eyes closed. And so it was, I thought Pogacar's team, as good as I thought Alpecin was, I thought they rode a perfect race. I thought UAE was a little, it just wasn't synced up. They didn't have, you know, you had Isaac Del Toro on the Chipresa who rode a fantastic tempo. I mean, you could tell people were immediately in the hurt locker. He's a young kid. This is his first Milan San Remo. If you don't know the exact time to go and how long you can go for, and does that get you over the top? It's hard. He couldn't make it to the top. He rode a fantastic pace. He was all alone on Team UA and he couldn't get to the top. And then that sort of neutralized the group. They just felt a little out of sync today.
It is, however, a very difficult task if you are the top favorite team. You know, you have to do all the work. I mean, I was surprised actually that they didn't even put anybody with Alpecin and Little Trek to contribute to the chase. But they obviously had a plan to, you know, and then if you have to carry the weight of the final as a team, it's very likely you're going to miss one guy in the final. I think today that's what they missed. You know, I mean, that's also why Tim Wellens came to the front. I was waiting, you know, they started the Poggio, they started fast, the other teams, but UAE was not there yet, you know? And so I think they lacked one guy. I don't think it would have changed anything. It would probably have been a bit faster before the attack of Pogacar, but the same guys would have stayed on. But man, controlling a race, a final of a race like that, when you have the top favorite and the team, and you are the team that has to control the race, it's not easy. It's, you know, it's, we all know it's hard, the Poggio, but at the same time, if you're on the wheels, drafting comes into place a lot.
I completely disagree.
Oh, really? Okay.
How many times did you drive in the car behind the Peloton when I raced Milan San Remo? And by the way, every year that you drove behind, you were the director, the lead director, I won the tour. I could not hold the wheels on the Cipressa and the Poggio. Okay. It's a different, it is not that easy. And look, the tour, if I can remember back to those days and think about those days, the tour felt, it felt like it was forever in the future. I had plenty of time. I wasn't worried about it. If I sit here just as an analyst or as a fan, I'm like, shit, we don't have that long until the tour. So they're two totally different mindsets and recollections, but I could never get over the front group. Now,
yeah, it's but a you were not in every, shape, Matt. You were not in shape at that time. Has changed.
If you have a guy who's won the tour and is going to win another one, if he's okay, he's not in shape to win. But
exactly.
You'd think he'd be in shape to be able to hold the wheels. My point is, it is not that easy. They're going very fast. And here's the other thing. Here's the other thing. And if you all go back, if you watch it later today, excuse me, you will see, you know, the nature of these switchbacks are such that once it's strung out and there is a team on the front, they are already outside. They're on the way out of the switchback and they're sprinting. And go watch the TV. Half of that group is breaking into the switchback. So, I mean, it isn't even a yo-yo. It is so extreme that if you're not up there, you're paying such a price. And of course, I never was up in the front. I was that guy that was breaking into the corner while the rest of the team that was at the front is sprinting. It makes it really hard.
I know, Lance, but you know, you also did when you, Milan San Remo, you came in with a mindset, this was a training ride for you, a training race to get an opportunity to get good miles. I don't think you were ever in the mindset, okay, I'm going to be in the top group here over the Poggio. It was a way.
What are you now, a mind reader? I mean, listen, you know everything about cycling, but you do not know how to read my mind. Johan, we don't need to get into this, but I will just tell you, I certainly thought, well, I can at least get over the Cipressa and the Poggio with the front group. I never did. My point being, it's hard. They're going fast. It's early in the season. It's been a nervous day. Think about it. I mean, the race is 288 kilometers for people who think in miles. That's 180 miles. I was at dinner with people last night. They're like, oh, what race is it tomorrow? I told them it's 180 miles. They about fell off their chairs. It's a long ways.
They
were blessed with absolutely perfect weather, which we know this race can have terrible weather. But it's in, by the way, too, and we have said this in previous editions, if anybody listening goes and rides the Cipressa and the Poggio on their next vacation, they go out for a 90-minute ride, they go ride those climbs, you say, what's the big deal?
Exactly.
This is easy. I can do this. Well, it's a little different after 170 miles. And I found it, personally speaking, very different.
No, it's one of those races. You feel great. And you say, okay, I'm getting over the Cipressa. A little bit harder than you thought, but I said, you still feel great. You get up to the bottom of the Poggio. You have to get out of the saddle. You say, oh, I'm not feeling so great anymore. But, you know, to your
first
point.
Warning light comes on. Whoops. Sit back down.
They go faster and faster. Fastest Milan San Remo ever, 46.1 kilometers per hour. fastest Poggio ascent ever. Van der Poel and Pogacar haven't uploaded their Strava yet, but Gamba broke the record. And, you know, little side note, Pogacar did a recon 3 days ago, and he just uploaded his Strava from 3 days ago. He both times he got the KOM on the Cipressa and the Poggio.
Just training.
Yeah. Training.
Again, different, right? We don't know how long the training ride was, and obviously he should have the KOM, but yes, I'm curious to see what happens when those two guys actually upload the race data.
Yeah, well, we don't know. I mean, it's going to be the same because Ghana was there with them, so maybe they went 1 or 2 seconds faster, but Ghana on the top of the Cipressa, up the Poggio, was there. Mm-hmm. What happened with Ghana, actually, because I think he had a little...
He's not in that front group. He's not in those first 10 or 11 guys. I noticed that.
He was there on top, and he hit a pothole, I've heard.
No, he had it on the downhill of the Poggio. I just thought he slipped a gear, and you saw he lost distance, or got, you know, he was messing with something. I felt like he was getting back on, but he's not in the results. Uh-huh. So maybe it was something, you know, who knows? But yeah, he... probably is trying to follow Pidcock downhill, which is impossible to do.
Yeah, and Ghana's no slow downhiller either. So
no.
We should mention Pidcock because it's even watching the commentators, they're like, well, as they go into the descent, watch Pidcock come back. And of course he does. Uh-huh. That's exciting. Yeah. That's amazing. And then he, you know, almost tried to pull off getting away. But that was an impressive, a very, very impressive thing. And I noticed you guys also mentioned an observation about Mohorič, who has won this race with the elusive dropper post, and then opts not to do that when he was right there. What do you make of that?
I'll let you on. I was surprised to hear that. And
I don't know the reason. It worked for him. Obviously, it's allowed. He has tested it already, so he obviously knows how to use it, because having a dropper post and knowing how to use it in the final of a race like Milan-San Remo is two different things. I don't know. I don't know the reason, if it's a sponsor issue or whatever. But you know, the way he goes down. You know, who knows what would have happened with the dropper post, but you know, Pogacar went down really fast, and at some point Van der Poel had trouble following him. So how much more faster can you go?
Let's pause on Mohorič, because I want to talk about him. I do think he's I felt like there for a hot second he was going to win. I thought he made the right move, but I want to go back to that. But before we do, today's show also brought to you by Helix Sleep. I've been on the Helix mattress for years and years. George as well. In fact, he's not here today. He says he's out doing a fondo. He might be taking a nap in on his Helix mattress. Have we considered that? No, I was the only one. Okay, good. The Helix lineup includes 14 unique mattresses, luxury models, mattresses for big and tall sleepers, and even a mattress made for just kids. They've introduced the newest, most high-end collection. It's called Helix Elite. Also, the Helix mattress comes with a 15-year manufacturer's warranty and the same 100-night trial as the rest of the Helix collection. That's for the Helix Elite mattress. And unlike other mattress companies, Helix owns its manufacturing facility. Every mattress, check this out, this is cool, is made in the USA and shipped from the factory to your door. All you got to do is take the sleep quiz, talk about your sleep, the characteristics, what you're looking for in your sleep, and they will customize the mattress. Sick. By the way, GQ Magazine and Wired Magazine has named it the number one mattress. Helix Sleep is offering our listeners up to 20% off all mattress orders and two free pillows for our listeners. Go to helixsleep.com/themove. That's helixsleep.com/themove. Last one of the day brought to you by HVMN. Boy, how much is HVMN crushing? Like, they did the jumbo deal, right? That's cool. I've been doing a bunch of training at the house on my new gym setup, and I've got a whole setup of ketones and ketone IQ. And so I'm having other people come over and train. Like, everybody's hitting this stuff, and they're like, wow, this makes a difference. It's crazy, right? The Ketone IQ, everything HVMN has built has absolutely made a difference. Check this out too. It's also available in Sprouts throughout the United States. But it's been a game changer. I love it. I don't do any workout without it. That's a fact. You can save 30% off your first subscription order of Ketone IQ at hvmn.com/themove. That's hvmn.com/themove. So go back to Mahorich for a sec. Cause I have to be really honest. I don't like, I mean, I think it's the smart thing to do. We saw it with Jasper Stuyven a couple of years ago as well, right? You see a little hesitation. You're like, I'm not going to win the sprint. I got to go. And then they bicker and nobody chases them down. We saw, you know, I thought that was going to be the move again. And I was like, no. Don't somebody bring him back. Like, is that bad? Should I feel bad? I mean, and he seems like a great guy, but boy, well, I just wanted to see 10 guys going to the line and winning that way. And of course we did, right? And Phillipson came out on top, but
instinctively when you see someone go, your nature is to root for them to stay away.
No, I'm just, and again, I try to be honest on this show. I was like, no. Just bring him back. You wanted to see it come down to the sprint.
Yeah. Well, you know, Milan Sanremo has been won a number of times with a late surge like that.
Yes.
On the flat, actually, you know, not just in the last part of the double, even on the flat. I honestly thought he had it, man. I mean, as we said, you know, without Van der Poel, this is Mahorich win again. And Phillipson doesn't win.
100%. I mean, look, go look back to that group. Nobody else had another, had a teammate.
Yeah. So Peterson had a teammate. It's Stuyven.
Okay. Well, but he was cooked.
Well, he did the last lead out, Stuyven, for Peterson.
Like I said, he looked great and he was just waiting to go. You know, we got stuck too. I thought about you, JB, because remember, you know, we're just a bunch of dipshits who watch this, but you know, they show that that head on angle and you see they're right there. And you're like, but then when they go to the helicopter shot, you're like, whoa, they're not right there. Uh-huh. So I tried a new trick today. I was as Mahorich would cross a crosswalk that had been painted. I was using those as little time checks. He never had, I mean, they're going very fast. Keep in mind, he never had more than 2 seconds.
Yeah.
It's hard. 2 seconds is not enough to stay away.
Yeah, we haven't talked about that in a long time. It's a filmmaking thing. When they shoot from the front, they use a really long lens. Otherwise, they would be right in front of the cyclist, right? Too dangerous. Yep. They're way, way far ahead. And when you shoot from that, with the longer the lens, the more compressed it looks.
Yeah.
From that angle. And then, like you said, you go ahead and you're like, oh, that isn't as close as we thought. But it's very misleading at times.
Yeah, but Milan Sanremo is such a special race, you know. I mean,
it's amazing.
You can, of course, we have those two guys, the two big favorites. But you know, like even Jasper Stuyven. I mean, with all due respect for him, he won this race already. But I honestly did not expect him to be in that 10-man group. We haven't seen anything from Jasper Stuyven until now, but it proves that he does have a big engine and that he can prepare for a race like that. Phillipson won some races already, but I don't think we have seen the greatest Phillipson this season. But for him as a sprinter to be up there, but Mats Pedersen, we kind of expected, you know, he's the strongest rider of all the sprinters. Phillipson's a pure sprinter. For him to make it with those 10 guys, you have to be incredibly strong. And then Alaphilippe, how about that?
Yeah, great point.
We haven't seen him very strong in those Belgian Spring Classics, but he was up there. And so I think Alaphilippe will get a good spring. He'll get a good spring.
He came up when we did the Tour Down Under coverage. We were like, is Alaphilippe back? Yeah. Is something going to happen this year? It was looking good early.
Both of these guys have something very much in common.
I know.
And we've seen this for decades and decades, and maybe forever in cycling. They both have one thing in common. They're at the end of their contract.
Exactly.
And the situations Well, that's the similarity. The situations are very different. Alaphilippe's situation has been, from what I can read and just sort of pick up in the press, which of course I talk shit about, but I still read it. It's been contentious, right? Not just between him and Lefebvre saying things, and the wives get involved and the women are involved. Like, whoa, this is ugly. Nonetheless, it's the last year of his contract. He's fucking Julian Alaphilippe. He ain't gonna lay down, but he has to do something this year. Because he doesn't then get a 1 year renewal or a 1 year new contract. No, he gets 2, 3, 4 years, probably 3 or 4 years, some sort of renewal or a new team. Same thing with Philipson. Again, not as acrimonious and not as nasty, but I just read last week that he's shopping around and people are saying, well, he's maybe getting old, not as fast as he was.
Boy, yeah, age 31, by the way. So you start thinking this might be my last contract. Another 3 year deal might be it.
Gets a new agent who we know of very well, Johan. He's an aggressive agent. Yeah. Boy, that agent tonight, as the boys over at Pat McAfee say, it's mayo all night, just mayo everywhere.
and then I put myself.
What a position to be in.
I put myself in the skin of the team manager of Alpecin, Christoph Roodhoff, pretty well. I mean, it's an amazing victory to celebrate. Second year in a row they win, by the way. At the same time, he says, "Shit, this is another million in my budget." Right?
You can celebrate, but what do you think? I mean, he gets to celebrate for maybe 15 minutes and then he has to start thinking about, but good for Philipson, right? Yeah. If you believe what you read last week, he seems like a class kid. Yeah. What a way to show up. And again, he's a sprinter, like to get over. If it doesn't seem that impressive, go look at the guys that couldn't make it, right? Where was Bignon? Where was Germay?
Yeah.
He can go uphill.
Jonathan Milan, they talked him up. Jonathan Milan, I knew Jonathan. I'll make it over to Gipresa.
You can go down the list, right? For him to make it over in front of these people that should have gone up easily.
If you look at the quality of those 10, 12 riders there up top, I mean, that was top class. Same goes for Michael Matthews. Matthews,
totally agree.
Also, we didn't see a lot from him. He's there. He almost won it. Mats Pedersen, he was actually my favorite for today. He never disappoints. Was up there also. So,
did you see Patterson's pre-race interview?
The way he said that he was the only leader of the team.
Well, the lady asked him, or somebody asked him. I mean, he had the face on.
Oh,
they're like, what about if it comes down and Milan's riding good? And he says, no,
I'm not the leader.
I'm the leader of the team. I was like, all right, got it.
I mean, I like Pedersen. He's a class guy.
I do too. I don't like the team he's on, but he seems like a fucking badass. I like that guy.
Right, super strong rider, and
he's
very,
a pro.
Very likable too.
Yeah, good.
Yeah. What else do we have? impressive. Pogacar still third after being so aggressive on the Poggio, attacking, then attacking again, going full gas in the downhill, still sprinting to third. That's quite.
We've seen that ever since he came into the pro peloton. He's fast, especially at the end of six, 7 hours, tough races. He's fast. It's hard. It's hard to come around that guy for sure.
Yeah, that was the only thing I had left in my notes is your thoughts on Pogacar, because we inevitably in every spring classic talk about the tour. It happens. Getting a good look at him again, not having an injury up till this point, which sort of derailed last season a little bit. What are your thoughts on Pogacar and the tour ahead?
Yeah, it's too early to say that.
Yes and no. I have information here.
Hang on. Hold on, everybody. Johan, in the old
it's
days.
It's like we planned that.
Yeah. In the old days, we would call them scoops. I mean, I know it's not that cool of a word.
Let me just scroll back
We would always, and I would, you know, I had to listen to these guys all around me speaking Flemish, you know, so I picked up Flemish from here, you know, every now and again. But we borrowed the English word scoops, and I would hip you scoops. Scoops. Do you have a scoop? Hip you scoops?
Well, I know he changed trainers. So Inigo San Milan is not his coach anymore.
That's a very big deal. That is not to be minimized, discounted, forgotten. That's very interesting.
Yeah.
I would love to know what the thinking is. Look, I don't know, him, Inigo, but that surprises me.
Yeah. Well, it's his new trainer is called Javier Sola. It's a guy who started training Adam Yates last year, and Yates
worked.
Big improvement.
Adam Yates is a baller. That's totally worked.
And so he's 65 kilos now. His plan is to be 63 at the tour. Apparently, right now he has an FTP for the people who follow this, FTP of 431, which is 6.58 watts per kilo.
Right now?
Yeah.
Hold on. Because I told you earlier that I couldn't follow anybody up either of those climbs, Cipressa or Poggio. He wants to win the Tour de France. His FTP is already 6.58, I believe you just said. Now, granted, you know, octane was a little different back in the day, but I was 7 watts per kilo before every tour. Again, different time. But at Milan San Remo, I would be shocked if I was at, what do you think, Johan? 5.5? 5.5. Maybe 5.5. So that's a lot more. So he's already there. By the way, before you say any more, are you sure these feel like some serious scoops?
Well, I got it through somebody. So I the guy put it in writing. So,
but before he put it in writing, he didn't say anything like, "Hey, keep this between us."
No, because it's not the guy who I got it through somebody else. So
I don't know. This feels pretty.
Then there's another thing. Time trialing has been a huge focus for UAE. We've seen Juan Ayuso win the time trial in Tirreno, beating Filippo Ganna on a 9-kilometer flat time trial.
Yeah, hard to do.
They did a test in Valencia in February, around Valencia, 30-kilometer flat time trial between Mikkel Bjerk, 3-time world champion time trial, Juan Ayuso and Pogacar. The results were 33 minutes 58 for Mikkel Bjerk, 33 minutes 40, so 18 seconds faster for Ayuso, and 32:44, almost 1 minute faster for Pogacar over a certain wall. So, you know,
folks, I feel like you're talking out of class, but I know you don't care. I'm not, whatever. These are serious scoops.
Yeah.
Like that's.
And especially if he wants to be 3.5 kilos in the tour. I just think that Pogacar knows exactly what he has to get through to beat Vingegaard, because Vingegaard is on a level that in the tour that he thinks he can get to, but he has work to do.
JB, aren't you glad you asked?
I'm in calculus.
Jay, you were sitting there thinking, you're like, all right, let's just figure out a way to wrap up the show. So you didn't know you were going to get 5 hammers of scoops. Like,
no, I almost brought this up earlier when you guys were talking about Pogacar. It's because you talk about how you might have been at 5.5, you'd be 7 watts per kilo for the tour. They seem to be race fit. Like, what? There isn't that swing for a Pogacar from early season to tour,
no.
Right? They seem to be staying at this higher level constantly.
He doesn't need to change that much, but his power doesn't need to change. But what did you say he wanted to lose from now until the tour?
He wants to lose 1.5 to 2 kilos.
Okay. So that will change. That changes all of the math, right? That equation of FTP is, let's just call it power to weight. If your power, just say it stays the same and that weight changes. Well, that changes the entire ratio. So, yes, his power should and will go up. But if you then also start to drop weight, well, then you approach seven, if not more than seven.
Yeah. Well, so one last thing. So Pogacar knows that in order to win the tour, he needs to produce 7.5 watts per kilo for 15 minutes, 7 watts per kilo for 20 minutes, and 6.65 watts for 30 plus minutes. So,
God bless him.
Was it this mathematical in your era? I think it was, where you knew, here's the numbers I have to hit by July.
Absolutely.
And the kilos, everything you're talking about has not changed.
Yep. By the way, it's not that complicated, right? To figure out everything we just talked about, right? In terms of diagnostics and tools, what do you need? You need two things: a scale, which I think everybody listening to the show probably has one somewhere in their house, a scale, and a power meter, which maybe not everybody has, but you need those two things. Once you have those two things, you can track everything.
And then one third thing.
The lactate meter.
No, the capability to generate that power.
Well, I was talking about just the actual tools you needed to have in the toolbox. Well, I shouldn't say it that way. That's the thing. Yeah. Anyway. Oh, boy. That one, the cycling, boy, they're going to hate on that one. Oh. Fuck them. All right. Well, it was fun. It was fun, I guess. Good kickoff. Good kickoff.
Yeah, good kickoff.
Classic season. About time.
But man, I mean, again, you know, we kind of go over it quickly. But if you really think, you know, like Pogacar did one race, Van der Poel did no race, and both of them, they're up there dominating the race.
Yeah.
How long ago you think it is that happened?
Never.
That somebody showed up at Milan-San Remo with, you know, traditionally, you had to have either Tirreno or Milan-San Remo in the legs. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. 1984, 40 years ago. Francesco Moser won Milan-San Remo. No Tirreno, no Paris-Nice. He just did one race, Milan-Turin, and he won the race. Huh. That's an exception. It's an exception.
All right. Well,
we will be covering some races this coming weekend. On Friday, we're going to hit E3. And then on Sunday, we'll have Ghent and Catalunya to cover. So lots of racing in the next week.
Yeah. And we've got some other episodes of the Forward. We had the Michael Chernow podcast, the Forward episode, which has gotten great reviews. And I'll just tease it out now. If you kill me, JB, you can edit it out. But we have Blake Griffin coming on the Forward, who was in town for South by Southwest. JB, you and I probably should figure out when we drop that.
I think it'll be at some point next
this week.
This coming week.
Yeah, it was a great conversation.
Yeah.
A great guy. He's such a good guy. Good friend. Great guy. Great stories. Talking. I loved the conversations about his experience with Kobe. Like that to me, I don't know about you, but that was the best part of the show. So
yeah, Blake, for those who don't know, Blake Griffin, NBA guy. It's weird when you see these guys that are nearly 7 feet tall just be humble and sweet. Like, it makes no sense. Yeah. They should just be crushed.
I've seen him at 2 a.m. after 18 cocktails. Okay. He's not humble and sweet. Okay.
Two shows coming in the next few weeks with very, very special guests. You would not believe the level of guests we had. The Move Legends.
Mic drop quality.
Two really big, big, big names in cycling. I went down to their place and interviewed them in person. So that's coming in the next few weeks.
Johan becoming quite the journalist in his
third career. He's a journalist now. We're going to write the rules. Hey, Johan, speaking of journalists, don't burn your sources, man. These fancy journalists, they really protect their sources. You're giving out these dope scoops. Like, be careful.
I didn't burn anything. I can still keep getting. Yeah.
Time will tell. Okay. All right. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. By the way, happy St. Patrick's Day. Isn't that come? Is that tomorrow, right? St. Patrick's Day or the next day?
I don't know.
Tomorrow.
Yeah. Wear green. All right. We'll see y'all soon.